Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with Philadelphia Orchestra principal bassoon Daniel Matsukawa when he was playing Mozart's bassoon concerto with the orchestra. He talked about how he uses singing in his approach to the instrument.
A tool I use when I practice is I sing a lot. I'm not going to sing for you, don't worry, especially on this microphone.
No, that would be great.
No, I will kindly decline. But it's one of these things I would sing, and then I would try to hopefully emulate that in through my bassoon. And by singing, it's the most natural way to make phrasing. We don't have to think about our fingers, our technique, the instrument, the embouchure, the breathing, and the support. And we just sing, and it's just a really natural way to create music, whether you're in the shower, whether you're doing the dishes, or just walking around Rittenhouse Square.
Are there any particular parts you'd want to illustrate that are ideal to show that?
Sure. Well, for example, the second movement, people can argue musically and in a friendly way that he quotes himself later on in his opera, The Marriage of Figaro, where the Countess enters in the opening of Act Two. And it is the exact same melody and the theme. So I can play some of that just to sort of show you, for example. Now, I will quote the part of the opera from this, the Countess aria, where it's sort of, you can hear the similarities. And so forth. But you can hear right away the theme is exactly the same. Actually, for that, it's in key in E flat, but it's a whole step higher for us in F major.
That's great. Well, the bassoon itself is such a fascinating instrument. For the people who have never seen it up close, can you talk about how it's constructed? It looks about 4 feet, but I understand it's actually 8 feet of tubing.
You're quite right. It's in actuality, because it's sort of folded in half for us, and if I was just to strain it out, it would be between 8 and 10 feet long. Obviously, my arms are not that long, so luckily they condensed it for us. And it's made of maple wood, and we use what we call a double reed of bamboo cane. And the bassoon is often known as the clown of the orchestra.
Why?
Well, I think Mozart, Beethoven, Tchaikovsky all wrote beautiful, beautiful lines, singing lines for the bassoon. Shostakovich was extremely kind and generous. However, Shostakovich was much more similarly in terms of trying to use all the characteristics of the bassoon. You know, we have Prokofiev, who used it as a grandfather, the flute for the bird, et cetera, et cetera. But I think what did us in was the Sources Apprentice. And once you start hearing that, that humorous character, I think that changed everything for us. And suddenly, you know, people relate the bassoon with broomsticks and Mickey Mouse, and then it opened up a whole range and repertoire for all the cartoons. And you can hear a lot of that on the bassoon.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, it illustrates this tremendous range where you can sing an aria and you can have a sense of humor as well.
Right. And so my wish, I can say this personally, is that people hopefully will walk away after hearing the bassoon as a more lyrical instrument. Yes, we can play short notes. We can play funny notes. But at the same time, it's a story I just told one of my students. My father used to ask me to play late at night, like around 11:30, and so it could help him fall asleep. And so I would look at him, I would be like, so wait, are you saying my playing is boring? He said, no, it's just so mellow and so beautiful and soothing. And so I would love people to remember more of the lyricism. You can call it the lullaby, you can call it but that singing aspect, again, rather than the bouncy Humpty Dumpty character.
What made you fall in love with the bassoon?
Funny enough, it was the sound. I heard it on the radio. I don't remember the piece. I do remember the radio announcer saying, that was a bassoon concerto. And I ran to my parents that day and I said, I would love to play the bassoon. And mind you, before that, I started my music career as a singer in a boys' choir. And I did that starting age 6 until my voice started cracking, of course, early teenhood. And then I became a punk rocker. I did a full 180. And I was a lead guitarist and a lead screamer for a punk band. And so when I heard the bassoon, I fell in love with the sound, and I immediately asked my parents if I could play the bassoon. I really don't think they knew what a bassoon was, but they were so happy. They were like, anything is better than that stuff that you're playing that's peeling the paint off the walls. Mind you, we did not have a garage. It was a small apartment in New York City. So wow. We were not a garage band.
And the range of a bassoon is pretty big, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite. It goes from a low concert B flat, and we can go up about 3.5 octaves to a high F, maybe even a little bit higher than that, like a high G.
Are there any secrets to the bassoon, surprising things that people don't know?
That's a good question, and it's funny that you ask. A compliment is that people often would hear a concerto, or if they would hear a recital, they would say, I had no idea that the bassoon could do that. I don't know what they mean by that, and maybe they just think that, you know, again, the bassoon is so, it looks quite big. It's like a big, big oboe or clarinet, and perhaps people might associate it with sort of like being like a tuba, and it can't play really fast notes. Not that the tuba can't, sorry, all tuba players out there. I know you can, and I know there are many virtuosos out there. But I would imagine that's the same impression people might have of the bassoon, that just they think of it as a low instrument and not so virtuosic. And I think people are often surprised once they can hear that the bassoon can do many things.
And in this piece, in this Mozart concerto, you hear high, very nimble playing.
Sure, and absolutely a lot of difficult technical passages. In fact, there was folklore once had it that Mozart wrote this almost as a joke when he wrote it to the person as a friend, that he wanted to write something almost impossible to play. And I would believe that, knowing that Mozart was quite a jokester and a prankster.
So is there any part that you'd like to illustrate?
Well, sure. I guess there are parts of, like, my cadenzas, which I actually quite haven't figured out yet. And every night I try to do it a little bit differently. And just based on a lot of ideas from him. Part of it is I would quote some of the tutti passages from the opening of the beginning of the, where the orchestra play, where the violin plays in the first movement. I'll play some of that. So, for example, that's a quite acrobatic, virtuosic section. And there are many passages like that and quite technically demanding.
Well, it's so much fun listening to you. And I gather from watching you, it's a lot of fun playing this as well.
Yeah, thanks so much. To have this orchestra behind me, too, it's getting to stand in front of them. It's absolute sheer joy and pleasure. And this sort of collaboration and give and take. And, you know, I turn around and I smile, they smile, and we all know each other, of course, but just not just the musicianship and the friendship, but it's so human what we do. And it's always so meaningful. And then we hope to share that and portray that out to the listeners in the audience.
Thank you so much, Danny Matsukawa.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.